My name is Mike Hayes. I was just your average podcaster. My biggest problem was getting good grades, but then I found B-movies, and it changed my life. Also, mountain bikes are totally rad, and I'm on this crazy adventure with B-Movie Mania!
Nice one. That's awesome.
All right, that'll work.
Welcome to the crossroads of camp, the bastion of the bizarre, the place where low budgets meet high praise. Yes, it's B-Movie Mania! And now, B-Movie Maniacs, here are your hosts, the cream of the crap, the connoisseurs of cult, your cinematic creepy uncles, Paul Brooks, Mike Hayes, Jason Hulls, and Crazy Chris Hudson.
Well, welcome everyone to B-Movie Mania, the podcast where low budgets meet high praise. That's our slogan. I'm supposed to say that. I don't think I've said it once anytime I've ran the show. with me as always, well, let's get things right out of the way first. I am Michael Hayes, your favorite B-Movie Maniac.
I think this movie got to him.
It did.
And with me as always is Jason Hulls.
What's up?
Paul Brooks. And Mr. Crazy Chris Hudson.
Hi, guys.
Mike, what did you do to us?
Oh, my God. Boys, thank you for coming and not quitting the podcast.
Wow. It was close.
I thought I really found a fun one. And I think I think my decision might have been bad. maybe I did like a B-movie crime.
I don't remember what my score was for the Purple Warrior. What was that? The Incredible Bulk?
Amazing Bulk. What the fuck?
Amazing Bulk. Yeah. Whatever that other one was. And oh my God.
You're going to Google? You're going to check your score and make sure you score it less?
We'll see how it goes. It's up to you to make me decide otherwise.
Anyone who just subscribed to check this episode out, by the end of this, will have unsubscribed.
This one's going to be rough, guys.
Yeah, I'm about to unsubscribe myself.
Yeah, so Jay, to actually answer your question about what I did to you guys, I asked you politely to watch the movie Josh Kirby, Time Warrior, Human Pets. For those not in the know, Josh Kirby, Time Warrior is a 6-part series that Charles Band made in the 90s. And it follows an adventure with a young, what was he, middle school? No, he's high school, right?
Yeah, he's high school.
Yeah, high school kid named Josh Kirby. And he's apparently a time warrior. And he follows around a character that represents someone in the normal pop culture zeitgeist, but I can't quite put my finger on who this old man he follows around really kind of makes me think of. Anyone got an idea?
Who could it be?
Who? I don't know who it could be. But someone.
It's got to be somebody. I just don't know who.
Yeah. Who?
Who indeed?
Well, I better call the doctor who might know who it is. Chris, you got anything to say about that?
No idea. Just that, was Charles Band flush with Puppet Master money at this point in his career? I mean,
probably.
You know, the thing is, though, like, I've seen Chris, you know, we watched that movie earlier on our special at Capricorn.
Oh, yeah.
That was a mid-90s Band movie. Like, what happened?
That was so good. I think he started pandering to children.
Oh.
I love Charles Band kids movies. And this thing. God. I thought it was going to be a real adventure because it's a 6-part series. Like, it really goes a lot of places. And I have watched most of these now just to get my, you know, I feel if I'm going to suggest it, I better understand the source material. And I don't.
how could you?
Well, first of all, I mean, going back to your who are we talking about reference? the overarching plot was completely ripped from a Doctor Who story in the, like, 1978, I think.
A specific one? Like, not just the general Doctor Who feeling?
Like, we've got this crazy, like, time related object that we've got to split into different parts and then we've got to hunt down. So yeah, yeah. Like I think 78.
Wow.
77, 78. It was right from that era of the show.
How to start this? So I fucked you guys over real hard by choosing the second installment in the series because I thought it would be fun to jump in.
You know, I hate to say it, but I followed your advice, watched the first one. Mm-hmm. I didn't think the first one was that bad. I mean, it was bad. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But there was at least there were some redeeming features to it. It was kind of fun.
I did not watch the first one beforehand.
Chris, are you able to sum up what happened? Oh, well, here's why this matters. Like I was trying to get at. The second movie, the first movie is only, it's like a one act explaining the death of Josh Kirby's dad.
Wait, that's something
that doesn't get addressed.
Wait, did Josh Kirby's dad die?
I think so. Did he? Fucking Zoetrope kills him. He's standing at the door and he kills him in that first one.
No, I didn't know that. Because he shows up in the flashback later or something.
Later is a flashback.
Well, that's, you know what? The worst thing about this is that the first movie starts off with a recap of the stuff that's going to happen in about 5 minutes.
It really
like
does.
It starts off like a TV show. Like you're okay. Maybe this is part two or something.
Well, yeah.
No, it just goes all that shit they just explained. We just watch it happen.
Yeah. Whoever was making these movies does not know how movies work because they literally, they start with a recap of the entire series to start out the show. And then they do like a one act that's kind of about Josh Kirby getting put off into this thing. And then two acts of his Dino Knight story. And then the movie ends on a cliffhanger that's real questionable in terms of content. And then.
Real questionable in terms of resolution, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That, too. And
they even stole Doctor Who cliffhangers. Shitty cliffhangers.
You know, really, this is a TV show. This is not like a series of six movies. They presented it like a series of six movies. This is a TV show, though. I mean, 45 minutes. I mean, we'll talk about the structure, which is just
Well, Jay, it's perfect then. That's what I mean. Like, so the first movie is one act to do the catalyst of the series, then two acts that don't finish a story, and then movie two is what?
Movie two, which is where I came in, movie two summarizes the first movie in, like, the first 10 minutes, and then the first half of Human Pets is the ending of the first movie, the Dino Knights one. It's ridiculous. So, like, you can't just jump into the series. Like, this is not a feature. This is two episodes of a show. One is ending an arc, and the next one is a fairly complete arc, next 40 minutes. Because then at the end, they show you more stuff of what's to come.
Yeah.
So, it's all over. But I do have one question. Can I ask you guys one question since you've seen the first movie?
Yeah.
Is Duke Donkington in the first movie?
which one was Duke Donkington?
Duke Donkington, quarterback of the football team,
captain of the wrestling team,
anchor of the track team, and God's gift to Green Oaks High.
Oh yeah, yeah,
oh.
Yeah. He was.
Yeah, he's in it.
Yeah, he was in the first episode.
Double D's in it.
Yeah,
Double D's in it. Two cronies there, and his Buffy the Vampire Slayer girlfriend that Josh also has a crush on.
If I tell you, do my homework, geek,
maggot,
worm, you do my homework.
Oh, man. Duke was great. Well, we'll get to that. But anyway, yeah, the structure of this thing is, it's real weird to just jump in.
It's if I may, I can summarize the first movie for you in just a couple of sentences here. Don't bother. Sorry, that was one sentence.
Now you tell me. Thanks.
No. It's like Josh Kirby's there. There's a space guy that comes down. Erwin 1138. Oh yeah, no. Dr. Zoetrope shows up and he's wrecking havoc on Earth in just the neighborhood. It's like on the block.
It is sweet ass time armor.
Yeah, he's got like a mech device.
Every time Zoetrope talks, I feel like I'm watching Bible Man.
There are forces at work here which you cannot understand. Help me out of my unfortunate predicament, and I will give you power you've never dreamed of.
I forgot about Bible Man.
I don't know why, but just his delivery of all of his lines. I've seen like a couple episodes of Bible Man. It's just something about it jumped out at me. Bible Man.
Yeah. Well, okay. Basically, Josh has to come back. Josh ends up with this old Doctor Who guy, Erwin 1138. And then, like, they travel through time, and then dinosaurs and this chick named Elizabeth gets displaced in time. And they go to medieval times. So then there's dragons, but they're dinosaurs. And the T-Rex knights are riding and a
Triceratops.
Them. Yeah, there's just two. We only see the two.
Two, yeah.
And then
to be clear, it's not medieval times. The restaurant.
No, that would be a great movie though.
I don't know. What did you see the villain? I mean, he looked like he was from medieval times restaurant.
He did look like a college actor trying to.
Well, make he it. Looked like that villain from The King of Kong. That oh, documentary. He did.
Can I give my quick take, even though we're kind of getting into this?
Yeah, no, sorry. Yeah, let's do quick takes.
Quick takes!
Okay, my quick take. This is like watching Doctor Who, but the Doctor doesn't know how to do anything. And the whole show is run by the companion. That's what this is like. Like, oh. Through the whole movie, Irwin, 1138, he doesn't do anything. He doesn't know what to do. And Josh is always like, I got an idea. And it always works.
It's very confusing.
He did one thing I noticed later on at the in the big climactic battle at the in the middle of the movie that finishes the medieval part.
Finishes the first story.
So we got the climactic battle right at the beginning of the movie. And he's got this power staff thing, this cane that he walks around with. And it's got, I don't know, it's like his magic wand or something. His, you know,
his power staff.
It's his sonic screwdriver.
His version of the sonic screwdriver. Well, he pulls that thing out and it shoots, it's like a gun. And he's just murdering people left and right in that battle. Just so nonchalant.
They kill people in this. Yeah. Just
pew, pew, and dead. Well, I mean, it's pretty nonviolent battle, but oh, God. He didn't have that thing set to stun.
Hey, you know, I want to focus on the second half of this because the first half of this is not human pets.
No, it's not.
This is Dino Knights.
I'm okay with that. All I want to do. Well, first, well, Paul. Wait, we didn't get everyone's quick takes though. So, Paul, what's your quick take?
I figured he would say something like that about Elizabeth.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think she would. Never mind. I don't even want to get into it.
Yeah. We're not going to talk about that.
I kind of agree with him, though, to be fair.
We might agree, but we don't have to say it. That's all.
Hey, before we get into the human pets part, I mean, can I just mention that the blacksmith, the character who played the blacksmith, his real name is Time Winters.
Wait, yes. What? Is it?
Yes.
Jesus. That's amazing.
And Time Winters is actually still going strong in Hollywood.
He's had a pretty long career.
He's got several projects coming out. So
I like it.
You might say in 2017, 2018, Time Winters is coming.
Well, speaking of him, so yeah, let's just touch a couple parts on this ending of the Dino Knights thing. What I thought was fun after good prevails. It's literally every medieval story you've ever seen. It's the most cliche story ever. It's fucking boring. Except there's stop motion or claymation dinos in it. Yeah. They're not even like fucking. Oh my god.
Yeah.
And yet you say that, but it's still better than human pets.
Well, this is true.
Oh yeah.
The thing is about this. So the first movie has two big things in it that I'm very confused. That someone read the script and went, okay, let's make this. Or saw the first one and went, let's make the second. Because there's two real big problems, I think, in this kid's movie. The cliffhanger for the first movie to bring you into human, well, the end of Dino Knights, but the beginning of Human Pets, technically, is that this bad guy captures Elizabeth, who's a heroine in our story, and he captures her. She tries to sleep with her. She says no. He threatens to rape her. And then she kicks him in the balls. He captures her, locks her up, and is going to execute her. That's what brings us kind of into this. Like, wait, what was that, Paul? He did. Yeah. Right before he was about to execute her, he said, the bad guy says, it's not too late for you to show the gratitude you denied me last night. Like, it's just real creepy and gross. And literally, like, he threatens to rape her. It's very weird for a kid's movie.
For what it's worth, that guy, Billy Mitchell or whatever the villain's name was, he's probably my favorite part about the movies because he's just chewing the scenery left and right. He just doesn't give a shit. He is it's over-exaggerated motions and just looks at the camera practically.
And,
he was great.
I'm pretty sure that rape violates the eighth code of Kang. Am I right? Paul, is that right? Oh, ninth. Okay.
Ninth.
Yeah. Okay. Right.
So the other big thing that they gloss over in this, but this is, I thought this was very horrifying, was, okay, so Dr. Zoetrope, the bad guy, is a black gentleman, okay?
Yep.
Here's the thing. In the he plays a dark wizard in the Dino Knights storyline. In the first movie, he is literally referred to as the Grand Wizard. Which, if anyone wants me to read the beginning of the Wikipedia for what that term means, the Grand Wizard was a title given to the head of the Reconstruction era Ku Klux Klan. And so I thought that was a real fucked up thing.
Well, and he's the, if unless I'm mistaken, he is the only minority character.
Oh, easily. I mean,
he's certainly the only minority in human pets.
No, yeah. Okay, so, all right, so a T-Rex fights a Triceratops. It's real bad.
Stop motion type stuff.
Oh, okay. So we haven't really been talked about even the characters. So we mentioned Josh Kirby, and then Chris, would you like to describe Irwin 1138 for us?
Yeah, he, like Jay said earlier, he's a Doctor Who that doesn't know anything and is totally willing to murder his way into the castle courtyard, but in kind of a good natured grandfatherly sort of way.
Yeah, he keeps saying that he's the second smartest man in the universe.
Yeah.
Second only to the villain, Dr. Zoetrope, who's a guy in a mech suit that can travel through time. And then, does anyone feel like they can describe who Azabeth is?
God, I...
Let's let Paul.
Whoa, I didn't think he'd say that. Wow.
Okay.
Let's just slow down.
We don't know how she got there. She was unstuck in time like the dinos, so we don't know why or how.
And let's not forget Prism.
I was going to ask, who wants to talk about Prism?
Well, Prism is this little creature that just speaks in like...
homunculus noises.
Just little noises. Right, and everyone just kind of understands him.
Yeah, it's...
But he's got that cool fiber optic hair.
Yeah, fiber optic hair.
Doesn't his hair glow? Okay, so the whole idea here is that they're all looking for the pieces to assemble something.
The nullifier.
And Zoetrope wants to assemble it, and then they're trying to get the pieces first. Doesn't Prism's... Is that right? Am I wrong?
You're 100% right. Listeners are going to be so fucked right now.
And Prism's hair glows when a piece of it is around,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, yes. Did we mention that Prism is, because every Charles Band production needs a puppet, Prism is the puppet?
Oh, yes. He looks like someone made a giant troll doll and put fiber, cut its head off, put fiber hair in it, and then like shit on it. Like it is, oh my God, it is frightening looking.
Yeah, Prism, and... in certain shots, he's just the doll standing there.
Yeah, or someone holding the doll. Like, yeah, it's
no movement. So, yeah, and basically, the Dino Knights thing is like one guy wants to kill his evil brother who's the king and become king, and the good guys have to help him. And Irwin doesn't really do anything. He can't climb a ladder.
He still gets knighted at the end.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, though. This movie is so low budget that they're not even like fighting over the kingship. They're fighting over a barony.
Ugh. And then, okay, so after the good guys win, because they just win in the fight, Prism figures out that this giant dinosaur ate a piece of the nullifier. I thought this was kind of funny.
I'm glad we didn't pass over this.
So what happens is, because the dinosaur ate the piece of the nullifier device that everybody's looking for, they have to make a big, giant bowl of dino laxative. And Irwin 1138 asks for a bunch of prune juice.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they just cut away into the time capsule after that, and they've got it. I want to know which one of the crew had to sift through all the dino crap to try to find the device. Who was it? Was it Prism or Irwin or Azabeth?
You know it was Irwin. Probably else is gonna do it.
Erwin was peeling it back like it was a, like a fucking owl pellet or something.
Well, to be fair, he's, he looks like the sort of guy who's into that thing. So.
He probably is.
Okay,
he's got a fecal collection at home.
The transition out of that scene is real weird and awkward. Okay, so is it a thing that Josh Kirby always falls through the time?
It seems to be the case.
He falls out of the capsule, and then he's flying through the vortex, the time vortex.
Yeah. Well, you're supposed to... So in the first movie, Erwin 1138 gives him this, like, wristwatch type thing, which is a big theme in the first movie. All these he collects watches because he's a fucking nerd.
Well, and loves his bicycle.
Yeah. Oh, my God, as he loves his bicycle.
As we'll hear about again pretty soon.
Yeah, literally, the beginning of the first movie, he talks about the bicycle. I think there's a flashback in the first movie where he talks about the bicycle again. And then in this third movie, there's more bicycle shit. Yeah. But, yeah, he's got a watch on it, right? So the transition in this, and that's supposed to keep him safe to travel through time. So Dr. Zoetrope shoots the watch accidentally. And then that just... jump cuts to the end of that story.
And he wakes up as a human pet.
Yeah, and how short was that shot? How short was that fucking exposition?
Yeah, it was so weird.
It shoots the watch, jump cut to Josh Kirby flying through space, and then the time pod flying behind them. And then there's, it couldn't have been more than 2 seconds, right? Maybe three them on a planet with a giant monster person thing over them, and then they wake up in, I will let you guys describe where they
are next. The year 70,389.
Did you write 79. That down?
Yeah, I wrote that down.
You're 10 years off.
You guys can fight. You guys can fight over that to the death.
Yeah. So they wake up, and this giant, like, mutant baby is standing over them that's hairless and, like, 30 feet tall, and it gets them, like, just that simple. It just...
Yeah, they
gets
it just,
them.
It just picks them up,
And then like it puts them in a box or takes them back to his giant room, and thankfully Josh Kirby narrates all that for us because the families of giants is there, and Josh Kirby says that the one that found us was a kid. Those are his parents.
He's a kid. The one who found us, he's a kid. And those are his parents. Oh.
Like, thanks, Josh.
He doesn't even repeat that a bunch. He's like, those are the parents. Those are the parents. Like, or whatever. Like, or it was a kid or something. Like, you can't believe it. But like, yeah, we see the difference.
Right. Like, it's just stating the obvious.
Hudson, what were they wearing?
Oh, God. Well, Josh Kirby was wearing your... the aliens.
Yeah, I mean the aliens.
I don't know
what
that
was. Josh Kirby was wearing a flannel shirt and jeans like in every fucking movie he's in, apparently.
That's the 90s, you know.
And it's like braided, belt.
Yeah.
Oh, God, braided belts.
But these aliens are wearing, I don't know, some silvery... Like if someone decided to like design a puffy, like, muumuu sort of... outfit that just like drapes over them, but it's like got puffy rings around it. It's all silvery and
it's like a fire blanket.
Oh God, yeah, and the parents wear their versions of it, and the kids. It's like there's no fashion sense at all in the year 70,000.
No, I tried to make a note. I was like, how would I describe this? And I was sitting on the couch and trying to think of some
think
funny way to describe it. No, I literally went, I'm going to let them do it. I'm going to let them do it because I couldn't think of anything. It doesn't, it's as if you had those big puffy jackets from like the 90s, early 2000s that were popular, you know, the big puffy winter down coats. But then it's not that, but it's kind of that, like a muumuu, but it's not. And then like, I don't know, the woman, the mom had a headband. That's all I know.
That's the only, well, that's how you know she's a woman.
And the little kid giant walks around, much like Prism, doesn't speak. No one speaks English. He's just walking around going, wah, 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 wah. God.
Well, speaking of language here, so what? Getting back to the dinosaurs one, you know, they're back in time 1,000 years, Middle Ages, medieval times. No one has any problems speaking, communicating with each other. Everyone speaks perfect English, usually with some sort of like Southern accent or Californian accent, something,
this
you know.
This is a really good point. Holy
something
shit.
Like that.
Yeah.
As soon as they get to the year 70,000 and they're all human pets, Like, there's a French guy, like a musketeer that can't speak English. Fortunately, you know, the professor dude, Doctor Who, knows how to speak it. There's a German dude that only speaks with a really bad German accent.
We were all struck by lightning and somehow transported into the clutches of this overfed kind. And we must escape.
You got the Yippee-ki-yay cowboy.
Name's Willie Pooch out of Dry Gulch, Kansas.
Oh, he's God.
God. He's rootin' tootin'.
Yeah. And then there's the was he a Viking? Was he a he's barbarian?
I wrote barbarian, but later on they refer to him as like the Swede, so he must have been a Viking, apparently. He looks nothing like a Viking.
The only way we know he's a Swede is literally his only line, and he says it 3 or 4 times, is yaw. Yaw. Yeah. That's all he says. Yeah. Oh, and he's knocked out early on and isn't even included for 90% of the story.
Because the little kid wants everybody to fight. Right. Like, the kid just dumps them out on the floor, everybody, and then puts a pile of weapons in the middle of them.
I also have to say, though, just as an aside, this is also ripped off from an episode of the Transformers cartoon in, I think, 1985, 86?
Yeah, isn't it also a Twilight Zone episode?
Yeah, probably.
There is one where everyone's like, toys, yeah.
Yeah.
So everybody starts fighting because that's just what they think they need to do. And Paul, what did you think of Azabeth fighting the Frenchman? Because he goes right at her. Okay.
Jesus. Well,
typical French. Typical Frenchman, I guess.
Yeah. And she does pretty good. I thought you'd probably like that fight.
Well, also, I like to point out that Prism takes the initiative to go get the weapons for various of our side, because everyone else, all the other like strangers, grab their guns and their swords. But Prism teleports, though he's a prisoner, he teleports,
yep,
and gets the weapons and brings them. He's like, hey, you need to fight, and like just brings everyone weapons to fight with. And well, granted, it's their own weapons, but it's still like he's just kind of like, yeah, let's do this.
And Erwin can't use his staff. And the way he describes this is probably my favorite line of the movie, if I had to pick one. I'm afraid my power staff is a rather delicate instrument which has been damaged by the jostling of these fleshy-headed mutants.
Dear God, that's what he says?
Yes.
That's right.
I'm afraid my power staff is a rather delicate instrument which has been damaged by the jostling of these fleshy-headed mutants.
Oh, I'm going to use that in bed next time.
Yeah. Jostle that fleshy-headed mutant.
sorry, honey. My power staff, oh, it's very delicate. It's been jostled by your fleshy-headed mutant. That'll work, right?
And yes, and this fight goes on so long.
Oh my God.
Like, it's so slow.
It's the cowboy and the World War I German pilot shooting guns back at each other. The musketeer and Azabeth are fighting. And then Hudson, what do Josh Kirby and Erwin 1138 have to do?
Well, Josh suddenly gets the bright idea that, hey, if they only pretend to fight, the kid will leave them alone. So Josh breaks out his best shitty kung fu.
And they don't even do kung fu. They just posture kung fu around each other.
This was the 90s. Terrible noises.
Well, I noticed Josh Kirby even vogues a few times. Like, he's watching a Madonna video.
This brings me to what I think is maybe my favorite exchange in the movie. And it is them fighting, those two, Josh and Erwin 1138, pretend to know martial arts. And it's very awkward. And at some point, Josh says, oh, your Xie Ling pragmatic style is good, but still, I must destroy you. And then Erwin responds with, oh no, my quantum particle acceleration style is more than a match for the likes of you. And that's where I had to get up and like go get a beer.
So at the end of this fight, Azabeth beats the Frenchman, but then he stands up and tries to stab her in the back.
Like a dick.
And Josh Kirby throws something. It's like his watch or something.
Stopwatch.
It was his watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because he's obsessed with it because he's a fucking nerd.
Yeah. And he throws it and nails the Frenchman in the head. And then now Azabeth owes him a life debt and she wants to learn how to use Josh Kirby's weapon.
Yeah. His necklace watch.
Yep. So they're bonded now. I thought they might have been bonded in the first movie.
They
but
did.
I guess
he,
not.
He saved her life before, so she owed him. But apparently, it only he saved her life twice. But apparently, it only took once. As we get to later, she saves his life at some point, and she's like, "All right, we're done with this like Code of Kang thing." Oh, we should talk about the Codes of Kang.
How? How?
Well, let me tell you. Code of Kang number one. Okay, so Azabeth is apparently from some ancient or future warrior race of people. And so they have, she keeps talking about these codes of Kang that she's got.
Well, actually, this actually goes into the next point because the kid drops them all back in the box. Mm-hmm. And Azabeth starts talking about that and revealing that she's the alien.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So everyone starts you know, hating her. I'm really starting to look at talking about this now. I'm really thinking that this whole human pets thing was a fortune teller type prediction of like the Trump era. So it's because those aliens were also big headed orange creatures. So like, anyway, we'll skip the politics, but, yeah, like, there's a whole bunch of codes of Kang that she brings up throughout the series. Only one of them is specifically used in this one, or revealed in this one, which is anything too cute can't be trusted. Which I believe she reveals when she's talking about fucking Prism, which is confusing, because that is not cute.
No, that's horrifying.
Yeah, in fact, when they get put back in the box, the cowboy freaks out about how cute Prism is, and I'm like, don't touch it, you're gonna get all of the diseases.
And he thinks that Prism is a coyote.
Yeah, he does.
I totally missed all that.
Yeah.
Oh, it's well, he's saying it in his unintelligible, really bad, like fucking coal miner, not coal miner, like gold miner accent. It's but
and if I may, while they're all talking there during that, and Azabeth is confessing about how she's odd and nobody's going to like her, that brings up our first flashback of this movie.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And Paul, can you tell me which character comes up in this flashback? Duke Donkington, that's right.
Yeah, that's right.
And they all want to beat up Josh Kirby. Like, we all want to beat up Josh Kirby. And it's a flashback to show Azabeth how uncool Josh Kirby was and how it's okay. And this is the message part of the movie, I think, which I don't know what the message is, but I like Duke Donkington.
So, then he goes on about his bicycle for 20 minutes.
No. The bicycle comes because they decide they're going to escape, right?
No, yes, it's part of the flashback. He's telling.
No, he tells
Azabeth
not the
about
first flip. Oh, really? Not the first one. There's two flashbacks.
To be fair, I was completely checked out by this point.
Understandably, once the actual human pet story starts, you're like, "God, there's more." I thought we got an end.
Listeners might be wondering why we stopped talking about the giant orange baby. It's because he's gone from the film. He just leaves the room. He leaves his bedroom. And so they're stuck.
They fight. And then he's like, all right, I'm done. And then puts him away back in a cage, you know, and then that's where they are now. They're talking.
He got bored that nobody died.
Yeah,
screw these toys. These are no fun.
So they decide to escape, right? Like, they're like, let's get the hell out of here. But the strangers have all been there for a while. So Doctor Who 1138 is like, well, fuck it, we can get out of here. And Hudson, do you remember how that works?
Oh God, is that the part where they see the plane on the ledge or the?
It's right before that. No, he takes his cane, which is somehow working again.
Yeah, it's all of a sudden working. Yeah,
well, he jostled it a little in the right way, and it's
jostled it on their flesh head.
He's got his cane out and he just like cuts a hole in the wall. Like it's a fucking sonic screwdriver.
That's right.
And a lightsaber and everything. It's just a fucking
all while the German guy is making fun of him.
Yeah. He's like, you won't get out. No, or whatever. That was more French anyway, but yeah,
it's still better than the German's accent.
Yeah. It's true. So they get out and they just instantly go, oh, hey, there's the German pilot's airplane up on that table.
Brunhilde.
God, was named Brunhilde.
Yeah, and they walk out, and this is another point in time where Erwin is just like, I don't know what to do next.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like, whoa.
And then they see the plane.
God,
Erwin is next to useless. Just give Josh Kirby that power staff and let him go.
They see that the German's airplane's up on a table, and the time pod's up on this table, but it's super high up. It's like 500 feet tall, they say. But Azabeth finds a solution.
Mm-hmm.
And who wants to say what that is?
Paul.
Yeah.
God, it's, yes, that's right.
It's the alien's underwear.
Fucking whitey tidies.
So they take the alien whitey tidies and make apparently a 500-foot rope out of it.
they pretty much threw a little bit of green screen and teamwork. Whoa. They climb up whatever shelf or bin that toys are on, the time pod and the airplane. And this is the point in time where they decide it's time for another flashback.
Oh, okay.
Because there's a bike up there with the plane. And then Josh starts going off about how riding a bike is like flying and it's the most free a little boy can be.
Every morning I would ride my bike like a maniac. That's what he said.
And it's like 20 minutes long. It's half the movie.
Yeah, it's so weird.
It's baffling because Josh Kirby is literally sitting next to a World War I era fighter plane and a time pod, but a mountain bike is what fucking catches his eye. Woo-hoo.
And there's a montage of him riding the bike around. And it's like, dude, you would think there's should be some urgency to escape, and there's none by anybody. No one cares.
Well, thankfully, maybe the reason for that is because did we find out before that, or is it after that long thing that the plane is broken?
I don't remember.
It doesn't matter. You're right. It doesn't matter.
And it's about this time, at least from what I have in my notes, that the little kid wakes up. And I didn't even know he was in the room the whole time.
He was on like a little shelf bed or something.
Yeah, he was on a table. They put a tablecloth on and then he laid on it like it was a bed.
Yeah, and so Erwin still admits he has no idea what to do.
Yep.
And he tries to jumpstart the German's plane. And the kid, isn't this where, Josh gets on he's like, I'm going to distract the baby. And he gets on his sweet bike and starts riding around the room.
Well, one, he gets to the floor from this 500-foot tall table, right?
Which is no ridiculous. Idea how.
Right.
But one thing I noticed is, I guess there's a convenient ramp down, which I guess they could have climbed up this ramp. However he gets the bike down, they didn't need to get the underwear to climb up. They could have just gone up the other way. The first thing he jumps onto off of the shelf is a goddamn gigantic baseball glove.
Yes.
Is it really? No, I didn't notice. Yes. Oh, my God.
It's a giant baseball glove.
Just an ancient game at this point.
You think they don't play baseball?
And it's the same size for this kid. So these aliens... Yeah. I guess they assimilated the culture. I don't know.
You know, another thing that we kind of glossed over was that the way they got the underwear rope up the whole side of the thing in the first place is because Prism picks up Josh Kirby and flies him up there. So we've established that he can teleport and fly, and he's strong enough to pick up Josh Kirby. Couldn't he just pick up everybody and fly them up there?
We've established that Prism is literally in this movie solely to just do whatever the writer can't figure out what to do.
Yes. Yes. And so Josh Kirby's, you know, riding his sweet bike around the room.
Oh,
and
it's so cool, guys. The kid really falls.
The kid falls and he starts throwing a tantrum.
Yeah.
And the mom giant comes out and grabs him by the ear and hauls him out of the room.
She gives him a little Larry Moe and Curly like slap on the face and then like woo, 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 and then you know he goes away
and then and just to be clear, listeners, we're almost done with this,
thank Christ.
It's the whole thing is probably 40 minutes, the human pets part. And so Josh notices Zoetrope.
Josh Kirby, come save me. You have to save me so I can save the universe.
Josh Kirby. Let me out, Josh Kirby. Because Zoetrope is in his armor, webbed to a chair. To a leg of a chair in his power armor. And so he tries to tempt Josh with power. You know, like, let me free and we can rule the universe.
It's a very Darth Vader and Luke sort of scene.
Like... No, I'm sorry. Why would Josh ever go for this? But he says something. Okay, this is another thing that gets me here, is that while in this exchange, as Josh is going to cut him loose so that Erwin can take him in to the authorities or whatever. He's like, Zoetrope says something to him, insults him in some way, and Josh Kirby legit says, "Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me." In a totally non-ironic, like, straight-faced way. That, like, and he says it like he's saying a one-liner, like he just drops the mic.
"Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me."
That's why Double D chokes him in the school hallway, because he deserves it. He fucking deserves it.
Yeah, Donkington would not stand for any of that.
And it's good. I'm on Donkington's side, because I'm team Donkington. Josh Kirby. Yeah, I'm team Double D, man.
I'm team Double D.
Duke Donkington.
Oh, and well, while they're having this exchange, Paul, what interrupts their discussion?
Oh,
yeah,
ew.
A real shitty ass spider.
It does look kind of like that too. Yeah, it just globs all over his hair.
Oh my god, it is.
It looks.
But it's like, also like a plastic spider on the bottom of a chair that like. It doesn't even move. Like someone shakes it with a stick or something. Like it doesn't. Yeah. It's not animated or anything. It's
and it jizzes on Josh from off screen.
Jizzes on Josh. Try to say that five times. Jizzes on Josh. Jizzes on Josh. Jizzes. I can't think you can. No, but fucking Doctor Who 1138 comes through. He just zaps him with his cane and then it's gone. Like, it's the most benign threat.
Again, Dr. Irving just murdering. There's no regard for any form of life.
They cut to Zoetrope and they've just basically tied him on top of the time pod.
Yeah.
It's like the next cut, time has passed.
Well, they're going to go on a trip. So they're going to tie the luggage to the top of the time pod.
And now the Swede is back somehow.
He finally jumps back in.
Yeah.
And they decide that Azabeth is going to stay with the main crew, but the other guys, somehow they're going to go exploring together?
No, they're going to go explore Earth together, the new Earth. Yeah, well, to fix the plane, Doctor Who 1138 gave them a quote-unquote jump start, which he thought would apply to their lingo, but they had no idea what that meant, because they're all from a long time ago. And so apparently that gave... I like that the German says... "My plane now somehow has some sort of endless power supply," which is, I don't think, the wording that anyone back then would use, but whatever.
Probably not, no.
But yeah, they're going to go explore Earth.
With the cowboy strapped to the wing of the plane.
Well, because the plane only has enough room for four people. Three in the cockpit, one in the wing. But the time pod also only has enough room for four people.
Guys, I take back everything I said. My favorite line of the movie is when the cowboy asks, the German says, "We'll have to," and that's with him strapped to the wing. And the cowboy goes, "Whooey, that sounds like fun. Which part's the wang?"
What part is the wang?
I think I may have missed something here, too, because I have in my notes, the toy plane zaps out of existence and the kid throws a fit. The baby giant throws a fit.
Oh, no. The toy plane does it. The toy plane flies through a window, which apparently is just allowing the vacuum of space into it.
Okay.
But
so they're just gone, though.
But the time... So he gets mad about that. Yeah, they fly out the window, and the kid gets upset about that, and then the time pod disappears in a very TARDIS way. And
there's very little drama with all of the giants overall. I mean, there was no...
Oh, we didn't. We also didn't mention that the thing just looks like tall blue walls made of press board.
Yes,
the whole set for that is real, real bad.
And the German airplane looks like it's made out of cardboard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think they spent all their budget on claymation dinosaurs.
Yep.
For the first movie,
they blew their spider wad in the first film.
Official hashtag spider wad.
Can we talk about the twist now?
Yeah, I guess.
I am assuming, Mike, that I don't necessarily want you to explain it because I don't need to really know. But
I missed the twist at the first time I watched this, but I think I know what you're talking about, and I caught on to it the second time.
Well, let's let Paul say it. Yeah, what was that?
I still don't get it.
So what you guys may have missed was that while Zoetrope was on the rack of the time pod, tied up there. Prism was up there for God knows what reason. And there was a little red light that from Zoetrope's mech suit that he shined on Prism, which seems to be, I assume, the reason why Prism, quote unquote, went rogue.
He did.
Yeah, he did.
And he gives Zoetrope that stupid plastic device that the Devastator or whatever
the
thing.
Nullifier, yeah.
The nullifier.
By the way, the nullifier is the whole reason these movies exist in terms of the interlocking story. They're trying to find these parts of the nullifier, which we briefly touched on, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's barely mentioned in this.
Yeah.
Somehow, like, the pod opens again, and Josh is going to fly out into the time vortex.
No, that's when it opens. No, yeah, Prism opens it to give the nullifier pieces to Zoetrope.
He's going to fly out of into the time vortex, and she uses her, like, S-shaped blade thing.
Your little lightning blade or something, yeah.
Yeah, it's like a little lightning bolt thing. So she throws one and hits the switch and shuts the door, thereby
saving Josh
Fulfilling
his life.
Right, yeah. Fulfilling her oath to save him. And she still cares about him, though, kind of. So she's like, are you hurt? And he's
like,
I'm hurt down here.
Oh, my God.
So she keeps feeling lower and lower.
Oh, my God.
He's just messing with her to get her to feel him up.
My side kind of hurts.
Where?
No, lower. No, lower. Lower. Right there.
Yeah, he was just trying to get her to touch his dick.
It's like, no, lower. Oh, it hurts. Lower.
Paul, how'd you feel about that?
Yeah, that's what I thought.
So now they're completely screwed, right?
Well, they need to get the nullifiers now. They have to figure out what to do. Yeah, they don't know where to go because Doctor Who 1138 is fucking clueless.
Right, he says straight up, like, I have no idea where they went. So, and what happens next? Josh says, hey, wait a second. I have an idea. Move out of the way. Because somehow he knows, right?
Oh my God, he does somehow know.
Just says, I know.
Did I miss something here? I thought Josh Kirby fell out into the time vortex.
No, that's what happens next.
It doesn't make sense, but it's about to happen.
Somehow, and I just have this in my notes. I don't know how it happens, but he's punching buttons, and then the next thing you know, he's falling through the vortex again outside of the time pod. That's why I was like, why is this a thing?
Yeah, he types on the computer. He sets in some sort of coordinates, presumably. And then Doctor Who 1138 pulls the switch. Oh, he says, prepare for the storm, which is his, like, engage. And then he pulls the switches, and then it starts working. And Josh goes, he says, yeah, I did that, right? Right? And then you see the outside animation of this really shitty thing of a ship hitting something that explodes. We don't know what it is, but for some reason there's something in the time vortex. And then Josh Kirby somehow is outside of the ship.
Again.
He really needs some time training wheels.
That's it.
Way too much.
That's where this episode breaks.
That's where it ends. But you can continue watching in Josh Kirby Time Warrior : Toyland.
Yeah, I don't want to see Toyland.
I've watched Toyland. I almost did that one instead of this one, but I chose this one specifically because it had the two different storylines that I thought would be funny to have to watch if you didn't watch anything else.
Oh my God. You pulled a Duke Donkington on us.
Hey, you know, maybe if you weren't so into mountain bikes and fucking watches, I wouldn't have done that.
Right. Well, Mike, just for my own curiosity, where does the third movie rank? And how many of these have you seen now?
I've seen three of them. I haven't watched the other three. Who knows? I got The Night's Young, though.
Oh.
There's one that's a backstory with Azabeth, which, Paul?
Yeah. You're just skipping right to that one, huh?
Yeah, makes sense.
I don't blame him, though.
Rating time.
All right, guys. Shit. Well, let's do 1 out of 100 Codes of Kang. I don't know. I'll go first. I know what I'm gonna say. I'll just let it happen, then I'll see what you guys think after this. The movie was bad. It was boring. It was troublesome. So there were some funny parts or some enjoyable parts in, you know, in that kind of fun, ironic way. But in the end, I think I have to give this thing like a 19. Codes of Kane.
Wow.
Wow. I thought you were going to go higher for sure. Wow.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You know, okay. I have watched three of these now. And I'm probably gonna watch more of them, but that doesn't mean I'm not a fucking like
you're just a Josh Kirby yeah. completionist.
Yeah. All right. One of you guys know what you want, Chris.
All right. You know, I, Mike, you're killing me here. You picked my favorite movie of this season with Joysticks.
Ah, yeah.
And then you also picked my least favorite movie of this season with The Amazing Bulk.
Yet, oh, yeah.
Yet somehow you've beaten one of those.
Oh, wow.
In my experience.
Bulk is so much better than this.
I didn't think we could get much lower than The Amazing Bulk, but there was nothing in this movie that I mean, okay, there were a couple things that I thought were kind of cool, but my God, there are so few just things enjoyable about this movie. And I was going to give it a 10, but this conversation just reminded me of how shitty this movie is. So I'm going to give this the sixth Code of Kang.
Oh, six? Wow. Wait, six. Wait, hold on. I can tell you what that is. That yeah. is the sixth Code of Kang.
I'm rating it so low, there's actually a Code
wait,
of Kang
I can't.
For this.
It, the sixth Code of Kang is never mentioned in the series. Fuck.
Oh, God. Well, then all the more reason the sixth Code of Kang is... Don't watch a goddamn Josh Kirby movie because
yeah.
it
oh, wow.
sucks.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Ugh.
Okay, well,
all right, Jay, what do you got?
Yeah. See, here's where I was thinking. The lowest thing I've rated this season was so far in this season was Zombie Decadence.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I gave that a 25.
Oh man.
So I had to ask myself. If I had to watch Zombie Decadence again or Josh Kirby Human Pets again, which one would I choose?
Excuse me. Jay, it's yeah. Josh Kirby Time Warrior Human
right,
Pets.
Right, Human Pets.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's important to be accurate.
Yeah, sorry. So I said I would much, much rather watch Zombie Decadence again. So so it would this score has to be under 25. That's my starting place.
Yeah.
I usually try to be really positive about these things, but I didn't like the structure of it. Nope. I think if we had watched the Dino one, maybe I would have felt better about it and given it a higher score or something. If it was a complete movie, but it's not. So it's not a complete movie.
No.
It's a weird structure. It's all over the place. It's slow. Somehow they stretch 40 minutes out forever, like we've probably done with this podcast. I'm going to go 11.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. You make a good point, though, Jay. They somehow made it slow. It's two movies. It's the climax and end of one movie and then a whole other story, and they somehow made it slow.
Yep.
It's baffling.
Well, yep. You know, I really want to know what Paul thinks of this movie.
Yeah. Paul, you've been quiet. What's your rating?
Whoa.
That's, wow. That's higher. That's higher than I expected.
Yeah. That's still pretty rough.
Yeah.
That's considering how you've been saying earlier. Yeah. Yeah. Jeez.
So this is Mike, you have the role or you get the prestigious award yeah. of having the lowest rated movie that we have chosen on this podcast. So
yeah.
Far.
You know what? I feel okay about that. Well, Chris, please have something better than the garbage I fed you guys.
On the next episode of B-Movie Mania.
I've got something that I've seen once before. I'm a pretty big fan of this director. It's been a long time since I've seen it, though. But let's just say that before Aragorn, before Frank Bannister, before Lionel Cosgrove, there was Derek. We're going to watch Peter Jackson's first movie, Bad Taste.
Ooh.
Oh, nice.
Oh, man.
That's awesome.
This is going to be in contention for best.
Yeah.
Yes. I saw that one time a long time ago.
Oh, my God. That's good.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Gotta watch the taste of Josh Kirby out of my mouth.
Well, but, actually, speaking of, I just want to make it clear that the next episode, the Bad Taste episode, we're actually going to have the last half of this Josh Kirby podcast as the first part of the next episode. And then we're going to have a completely other podcast with bad taste as the second half.
God.
How dumb would that be? Because that's just what we went through with movies.
Okay, guys, before we go out, can I share with you a Code of Kang, please?
Sure.
Okay. Code of Kang number 9. If one snoozes, one loses.
Listen up, maniacs. Do you have a question or a comment? Would you like to send some bourbon to Uncle Lloydie? You can contact the gang on Facebook at B-Movie Mania. You can also drop them a line at bmoviemania.com. Reach out. Touch them. They're touching themselves. And they might just reach back. I'm Lloyd Kaufman saying, see you next time on B-Movie Mania. Woohoo!
Code of Kang number 69. Press lower. No, lower. Little lower. Lower.
Jostle that fleshy-headed mutant.